in to the Self-Help Podcast, a weekly no-nonsense guide dedicated to your emotional health and well-being. Presented by entrepreneur Edward Lamb and psychotherapist Sean Orford. For more information, visit liveinthepresent.co.uk.
Right, okay. Hello, welcome to episode 173 of the Self-Help Podcast. With me, Edward Lamb, and Sean Orford. How are you, Sean?
I'm stunningly wonderful. How are you?
Good, yeah, autumn's here, isn't it, as I drove across to your house tonight.
Yeah.
Phone on silent.
It's starting to get cold.
It's dropped below 15 degrees, I reckon. It's officially, winter is coming. Hey, yeah, we had a pretty good run, didn't we? Summer, I thought.
Yep.
Certainly the latter part of summer.
Yeah, we had a nice Indian summer, late today.
I thought so.
Very good.
This week we are talking about infidelity from the perspective of the person that has committed the adultery.
Yeah, the cheater.
The cheater. Okay, yeah, they will go on that. Yeah, interesting perspective. I think that's what you will find this. Before we get into that, visit our website, liveinthepresent.co.uk, for all the show notes and links. There's a few things we're going to link to, as ever, that you can find on our website. And you can find all previous episodes on there as well. If you're new to the show, check them out. They're pretty good, we like to think, don't we?
We
put our heart and soul into this show, don't we?
We do. Just haven't got any.
Sort of. Yeah, if only we had one.
Yeah.
And follow us on Twitter and Facebook and all that stuff. We're all over the show.
Yeah.
How you doing there, Sean? You've been busy?
I'm Fitbitting. We got a pair of Fitbits, so we did things like there's a... it's either a small mountain or a big hill. Move am I?
It's a hill.
We climbed at the weekend. Oh, I don't know.
It's a hill. It's like 400 metres.
No, at least 450.
It's a nice
thing. My Fitbit, by the time we got stopped, said that I'd climbed 107 staircases.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Okay, well.
I don't know how many staircases there are in a mountain.
Well, I know, because I mean, there are plenty of mountains in Snowdonia that aren't. Apparently, basically a mountain is like 1,000 metres plus.
Is it?
So there are quite a few big peaks in
Snowdonia. Like, what's the difference between a ship and a boat?
Oof, I don't know.
Neither do I.
Yeah, Kader Idris, that's a mountain I like to climb quite when I get sick.
Yeah, why do you think Kader Idris is a mountain?
Well, it's like 900 metres, but...
But that makes it a hill then, because it's not 1,000, so it can't be.
It's a tougher walk than Snowdon, I think, but... November, yeah, lovely. Nice getting out and about, isn't
it? It was good. That's good. Yeah, Ria and I are getting fit.
Mm-hmm. So. It does beckon you from Alvama, from the world, doesn't it? Because you can see it from almost from our bedroom window.
And when you go to the top of Alvama, you can see Blackpool Tower.
On a clear day, yeah.
Yeah.
Did you see it?
No. It was cloudy.
Yeah. Good on you.
Yeah. Cool. That's good. So what have you been up to then?
Yeah, no, just 100 miles an hour for me, getting into the new routine. Will started school, so... School run every day and all that stuff. Yeah. Get out the house, wear your socks.
You're sounding like an exhausted daddy.
Yeah. Well, it's just a small period of adjustment for us. Another one. Keep changing kids. They grow so fast, don't they? People say it. It's true.
Yeah.
But, yeah.
Suddenly they've got bristly chins and they're wearing bother boots. And
But I quite enjoy it, man. I like our little walk. I get to have a nice chat with the lollipop man.
All right.
Getting to know Daniel. He's a good guy. Yeah. Cool. Turning my nose up at all the people in their cars. Why aren't you walking to school?
We should get a Fitbit. That make you walk.
Yeah, it's all good, man. Lots of work on the go as well. We have had an email. I'll dive into this week's episode. We do encourage people to email us with requests, things to talk about. Not that we, Sean and I, are ever short of stuff to discuss.
Can't shut us up.
We're always looking for new ideas. And we've had an email from a listener about infidelity, and I'll read out his email because it's interesting. Hi, sorry to bother you. Well, first of all, don't apologise. It's not an interruption. So I apologise for taking so long to reply. I'm just wondering if you could do a podcast on how to get over the guilt of infidelity. I have been unfaithful to my wife, and I'm struggling with the guilt big time, and I can't seem to get over it. I've lost everything that mattered to me, and there's no going back. I've lost my life, my kids, my wife, my security, and I've got no one to blame but myself, and each moment of each day is filled with guilt, shame, remorse, anger, hatred, etc. Lipinek, as if there could be anything more for myself, and I'm just wondering how you propose to move forward from that. So that's pretty serious stuff, isn't it, really? Thanks for getting in touch. But I thought it'd be quite an interesting perspective, this, because usually we deal with infidelity from the side of the person that's been wronged, or
is that the victim?
Yeah, exactly. But there's the person on the other side, which, all right, you've mucked up, you've probably made a bit of a mistake, whether it be not sorting out your initial relationship and then moving on, or, but you know, there's feelings to be dealt with there, aren't there? As we've just heard. So,
but lots of people come to see me from both sides of this coin. And like you say, we've spoken about the person who feels like they're the wronged partner.
Yep.
But I do have quite a few people that come to see me who have been... Either they've been caught having an affair, or they've had an affair that no one actually knows about and they're feeling a lot of guilt. And very often it's as though they're coming to therapy, like going to a priest, seeking absolution or forgiveness or something.
Yep.
The biggest problem that I come across is somebody who has had an affair, they know they shouldn't have done, they know it was wrong, and they're trying to come to terms with it, but they've got the confession bug, and they need to confess, and they end up confessing to their partner. And in the end, that's the most destructive thing that they do. And it sounds here like I'm saying that you shouldn't be honest. What I'm saying is you should be maybe conscious of the effects of what it is that you're going to do. And obviously, I have to leave it to the client to make their own decision as to what they do. But what I try and get them to look through is what would be the effect of fessing up to what you've done.
Yeah.
And very often, it does result in things breaking apart.
Yep.
Yeah. The issue would be, when you have done that, there's two situations you end up in. Either you end up in a relationship that you're desperately trying to rebuild, and a lot of therapy is about that.
Yep.
And one of the things for me is that if the man has been unfaithful, the woman usually is more motivated to work at putting the relationship back together. If the woman's been unfaithful, very often for the man, that's it.
Okay.
It's over. Women are much more likely... And I suppose from an evolutionary point of view, you could say, well, you know, they've got kids to bring up and a nest to build and all that kind of stuff. There could be reasons for that that go back beyond our cognition.
Mm-hmm.
But the woman is always much more forgiving than the man. Men don't tend to be as forgiving.
Okay.
But the other side of that one is when someone has either been caught or has confessed to, and then they have had that experience, as this listener has, of losing everything. Mm. So you end up in a situation where maybe you've lost your home, and very often houses are quite powerful in terms of home. Yeah, you've lost your partner, maybe you've lost the kids.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the things that we don't realise at the outset in relationships is when you marry somebody, or when you get together with someone like that, in that way, that you actually marry their family as well. And when you lose you lose the... It's much, much bigger thing, and the ripples from the pond are usually much bigger than everybody thinks.
Oh, no, yeah, I'll bet. I've discussed it with pals and stuff, and even my wife, actually, about, because we're all quite a close-knit group of friends, and all the lads in the gang tend to be married to people who are all friends with each other as well.
Yep.
So none of our relationships have crumbled yet, but statistically, so at some point in the next 30 years, one or two of them probably will.
Mm-hmm.
And when that happens, it's going to be quite awkward, really, because who's going to talk to who? And it might not happen, obviously. Hopefully it won't come to that. But yeah, no, I can see what you mean.
There are some very peculiar situations where two people split up, and then the two new couples still carry on socialising with the old social group.
Mm.
You know, those kind of things do happen as well.
Yeah.
But it takes huge levels of emotional maturity for that kind of thing to be able to work. And it depends on how things ended, I guess, as well.
Yeah.
You know, what kind of negativity there are.
Circumstances.
Yeah.
We don't know the full ins and outs of our listeners.
No.
It all happened in the end.
No. So I've written a blog to go with this one. I had a gap this afternoon, so I knocked off a blog. And the thing that the point of view I've written it from is the point of view of someone who is attempting to stay in the relationship and to put it back together again.
Yeah.
And that's the bit that's unclear from the text that we've got. It sounds like it's over, finished and done.
Mm-hmm.
Again, I work a lot with couples, and sometimes it starts off from that point of view, and the couple have come to kind of negotiate an ending, a bit like kind of mediation, but a bit more kind of psychotherapy rather than how we're going to sort the money out.
Yeah.
And there are occasions when couples discover in that psychotherapy of trying to work things through that they actually want to be together.
Okay.
Yeah. Mm. Yeah.
Yeah, well, yeah, let's deal with our listener then specifically, and then there's wider things we can talk about perhaps that people are at the moment in the middle of an affair.
Mm.
We're not sure what to do. We can come to that in a sec, but we'll listen. In terms of our listener who's kind of, it's sounds like it's almost a bit of a done deal, perhaps, in terms of the previous marriage is over. I don't know, maybe it's not completely. Maybe there is hope. But how can we help this person kind of move on with their own, you know, just living with themselves initially, right, and then they can deal with their ex? And
I think that there's a process in this that has to begin with things that, when I say them, will sound like people being selfish, maybe. And in a way, that's okay, because it is. And one of the issues about being alive is, why am I alive? And ultimately, any individual is alive for themselves. Lots of individuals avoid that and spend their life looking after other people and being alive for other people rather than being alive for themselves. But the process of living and learning is about self-development. And one of the things is, the more that I deal with me, then the more use I am to other people.
Okay.
So actually, the selfishness of sorting yourself out and looking after you enables you to look after other people too. So it isn't a totally selfish stance. Yeah.
Yep.
So that when you start to look at a situation of an affair in a relationship, there has to have been something not right for it to have happened in the first place.
Yep.
Okay. Because we're assuming in this that monogamy is the model. Look, sort of. A fidelity-based monogamy is what the model should be. Well, if we accept that as the premise,
mm-hmm.
then someone needs to step outside of that, and there was something that was wrong in it in the first place.
Yeah.
Yeah? There's a whole debate about, should there be monogamy? You know, should polygamy or polyamory be the models that people go for?
Yeah.
And there are massive debates about that. But if we're looking at a monogamous type situation, if you're unable to maintain the monogamy, then either something is wrong with you, something is wrong with your partner, or something is wrong in the way that you are together.
Yep.
And that, understanding that and processing that, is the therapy. It's the thing that people have to work through in couples work.
So we're saying initially, basically, our listener can kind of go easy on themselves because they did it for a reason.
Yeah, and that reason may not be clear
mm-hmm.
yet. If you can roll that around, there's a few things we need to go around as well, but if you can roll that around to what's life about, and if life is about learning, that means that the things that happen to us are things that we need to learn from. So they're the lessons that life is giving us. Yeah.
Yep.
If those lessons are difficult, that doesn't mean to say that we shouldn't deal with them.
Mm-hmm.
And there is a point that you can get to in mindfulness work where you see the problems that the universe presents you with as gifts.
Right.
Because although they may be immensely difficult at any one point, then the processing and the working and the learning and the growing is the thing that you gain from it.
Mm-hmm.
It's like that's the kind of fertilizer, and what grows out of the fertilizer is the new you.
Yeah, because yeah. Well, whatever happens with it, maybe we don't know whether he wants to get back with his wife or not. But either way, he definitely does have children, and he still is a father for those children. And he's got a decision to which direction to go in now, what type of father he wants to be. I mean, not in terms of like an absent or a hands-on, you know, weekend dad, but. Just in terms of how the kids view him,
And there's a whole load of issues in that, because depending on the age of the kids, which we also don't know, and depending on the emotional nature of the split, the mother, who's the primary carer for the kids, could be dripping poison or honey into their ears, depending on how she is.
Yeah.
So she will be going through her learning and her process, which will be difficult for her, I guess. So that if we can each of us... And like I said, this stuff, when you say it out loud, sounds tough and sounds selfish. It's like each of those children in that situation have their lessons to learn. Each of those children will grow and develop and will learn from what they're experiencing right now. As parents, all we can do is help our children understand the experience that they're going through. Hopefully we do that positively. It's always true that when the estranged couple can communicate well together, the stress is less on the children. But that's a big ask. It's a big ask both ways. In any divorcing type situation, even divorces that don't involve adultery, you still end up in that situation where there's a lot of negativity, a lot of negative energy flying around.
I've seen it,
And the whole thing about which side do we go for, you know, do we support mummy or daddy? And then there are the friendship issues, and there's a whole load of things that come from the ripples are huge.
Yeah.
In these situations, we know over 60% of people have affairs, and we know that in Britain it's dropped back a bit, but we were up to a 50% divorce rate of those people that decided to get married. That's beyond anything else that's going on. So that the idea of if you go into a classroom, and Bethan will be able to confirm this or deny this, I guess she's a teacher out there. That when you go into a classroom, the likelihood is that 50% of the kids in the class are going to come from blended families. So it's out there. It's ripe. It's everybody's doing it. It's happening all around us. It's that kind of stuff. Number one is, for me, is being able to accept the fact that something wasn't right in the relationship in the first place, and learning that, understanding that is useful, that helps. And then understanding the issue of why. Why did I do it? What was that about? And people talk about feeling dead, feeling that that they're not appreciated, they're not listened to. There's loads of things in that. But again, if we look at this from the point of view of self-discovery, if we can understand what went wrong and we can be clear about it, well, the magic thing is it doesn't have to happen again. Sometimes you have to take a couple of bites of the cherry before you get the message. But the more we can understand, then the better. So it's like, okay, why did I do it? Number one. The second one for me, when I'm working with an individual who's trying to work out why they've done what they've done, and maybe nobody knows, the next thing is, do I need to be honest? Does honesty help?
Is there a point where it might still be too soon for all this, where our listener will need to, well, I'm sure, speak to his ex or wife and try and explain why he did what he did?
One of the problems with that, for some people it works, but one of the problems is, if you were caught doing something, and you didn't come and confess it, I suppose, but even if you did confess it, could still be the same issue, is that the person then says, well, why should I believe you? How do I know you're telling me the truth? And the problem that you have then is that it doesn't matter what you say, there's always going to be the, the "our but" bit in it. And you could be completely 100% copper-bottomed honest, and the person that you're being honest to doesn't believe you. Because you're now a liar. You're now a liar, you're now a cheater, all that kind of stuff. And in many ways, you're in a situation where you can't win. So the only things that you can do are, it's the law of allowing. It always goes back to the 10 steps, doesn't it? It's the law of allowing the person who's angry to be angry without needing to either defend yourself, which feeds their righteousness, or needing to go against them, which feeds their anger, but just allowing them to be what they need to be, because they're learning their stuff too.
Yeah.
And that concept of, okay, everybody in this situation, the guy we're talking about, the wife or partner, and the kids, and the extended family, right, that's that side of it. The other side of it is the, what do you call her, the adultery, and the other side, yeah? Because she may have, or had, a partner and kids and a family. And so the ripples are going out here. But what you have to look at it from the point of view is that everybody, remember that thing we'd use it on the course. So you've got that quote from Epictetus, which is, people are not in the least affected by events. That's not it. The effect is their response to those events. That's what matters.
Okay.
Yeah? So if we're all learning and we can feel justified in our hatreds and our hurt and our loss and all that kind of stuff, or we can feel justified in our self-loathing and guilt and beating ourselves up for what a bastard we are, but none of that helps anybody. The issue is, if something went wrong, it went wrong because there was a reason. If you can understand the reason, then we can circumvent that happening again. Yeah. But if we're going to rebuild, it has to be rebuilt from the point of view of self-acceptance, of accepting the fact, if I accept that I got it completely wrong and I'm a total tit, okay, give yourself a slap, now get up and get on with your life. Yeah, don't spend the rest of your life beating yourself up for something that you got wrong, because we all get things wrong. It's the nature of being alive.
Yeah. For sure. Yeah, I was just thinking about the call, whether or not... we don't know whether our listener wants to get back into that marriage or not. Whether, if he does, maybe it's just for the sake of the children or not. Yeah, well, there's 101 questions I'd love to ask.
Yeah.
But either way, there is going to be some kind of relationship there, even if it's just kind of waving, you know, the kids in or out from the house at the weekend or whatever, isn't it? You know, in an ideal world, it would be a relationship which over time would become... between your ex-wife and yourself, quite a stable one, isn't it? Quite, at least a civil one, just for the sake of, yeah, I don't know.
Hopefully.
Life's short, isn't it?
There's another bit too, which is useful to look at, but again, like I say, this is all hard stuff. If you've just gone and had an experience with somebody, and maybe it's been a multiple experience over a long period of time, which may not just be sexual, there may be other stuff in it as well. Presumably you did that because it felt good. There were good things, didn't it? And those good things don't disappear because we've now been found out, or, you know, whatever's happened from there. And one of the things that is important in terms of getting a balance right inside yourself is there can be the party that's, okay, I got this wrong and I shouldn't have done this. Okay, I accept that. Now look at the affair and the person you've had the affair with. What was good about it? What were the benefits in doing it? And there must have been things in it that were joyous, good, wonderful, whatever. And we can play the game with ourselves of self-denial and say, no, no, that's all bad because it had this, created this problem over here. Actually, if we're honest with ourselves, there were things over there in the affair that were good.
Yes.
We wouldn't have done it.
Yeah? I'm sure, yeah.
And being able to get this balance right inside ourselves, and however much... It's weird, when a relationship comes to an end, the person that you're leaving or is leaving you is multiple things at the same time, which is really weird when you hear people talking about it, because if the woman's going, well, the woman can be a saint. She can be the best mother on the planet. She can be a total bitch and an absolute whore. And all those things switch around in minutes, 10 minutes, you know, one to the other, as this confused emotion starts to roll around like a tempest. And we have to allow it to play out.
Yeah.
Yeah, to get to the point where we can start to rediscover who we are. I mean, I guess the good news in this kind of stuff, if good news is the right word, is that within 2 years of coming out of this situation, most people are over it and they're into another relationship.
2 years?
Yeah, it takes about 2 years.
Okay.
Yeah. I do work with people who 10 years down the line, 15 years down the line, are still having problems with the ex. They've got problems with the kids have now grown up, the kids are getting married, who's going to go to the wedding? there are a million things that can come out and bite you.
Yeah.
I even heard one young lady who had a father and a stepfather say, well, I'm going to be the first bride who has two fathers taking her down the aisle, aren't I?
Yeah. Okay, cool.
Which, if you could do that, would be amazing.
Yeah, that's the thing. And we commend our listener for emailing us and kind of trying to nip this in the bud. Because, yeah, that's the thing. These things can, you know, I've got it in my extended family and people I know. Things that go on for years and years, 20, 30, 40 years down the line, and things still haven't been resolved. Crazy. And
yeah. And that's kind of sad because it goes on generations then if you're not careful.
Yeah.
I mean, the thing I'd say to this listener is, if in the honesty of the moment you feel that you have got it wrong, accept the fact you got it wrong. Don't beat yourself up for the fact you got it wrong, but treat it as a point of learning and look at it about, okay, what can I learn about me and other people? I may be learning about loss, I may be learning about bereavement, but try and get that balance. And whatever you learn from it, take it forward in your life and make your life really positive for what happens next.
Yep.
Yeah?
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Hard one, eh?
It's a tricky one, eh?
Right. Yeah. Because one of the things is, when you look at it from that point of view, I'm talking to the guy that has been the adulterer. If his wife listening to this, she might be thinking, but the guy's a total bastard. Why should he learn good things from this? You know, but in reality, we all are maybe at different places on the roadway, but we're all going the same journey. It's all about self-discovery. And we can be the smug one about, you know, but it wasn't me, it was him kind of stuff. But the reality is, if it was okay, it wouldn't have happened.
Mm.
Yeah?
It's and a tough
and
one,
we're both part of that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Think of the kids, man. Think of the kids.
But there's always going to be think of somebody, isn't there? Think of granny.
Gee whiz. All right. I think we've covered as much as we can there. Oh, no, actually, we probably talked for hours about this one. Thanks again for emailing us in. I really appreciate it. Have you got a resource of the week, Sean?
Yeah, it's yourtango.com. And it's a lady on there called Marina Pearson.
Okay.
She does some interesting stuff on... She talks about her own experience of infidelity and how she was the cheater.
Right.
And then what effect that's had on her and her life and stuff like that. It's an interesting blog-type thing to read.
Did she confess next time around?
You have to read it and see.
Yeah, okay. Assuming there was a next time around.
Yeah.
Cool. Yeah, mine is Good Old Love Actually, the movie. It's getting
wonderful
to the time
movie.
Of year when we need to, need to get the DVD out there, covered and all that.
Yeah.
But there's the particular story within that, all those different stories, isn't there? It's Alan Rickman and his wife.
But there's also at the very, is that at the very beginning that there is Colin Firth.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, and he's being cheated on by his brother.
That's right, yeah, okay, there's a couple of little stories in there.
It's all going on.
But it's a cool little film.
Well, one of the reasons why that movie is good, though, is because in many ways it reflects life.
Yeah.
So we identify with it, both ends, you know, the positivity of the wedding, woo, but also the issues of
the
infidelity and the loss. Yeah.
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 Right, and joy to be alive, joy to be human being. Next week, we have actually got one scheduled in, haven't we? Another listener request.
We have.
What are we talking about? Can you remember?
We're talking about naysayers.
Ah, yeah.
Nay.
Nay, the people in our lives that kind of think we can't do something when we know we can.
Yeah.
They have this great influence over us. Don't they?
Yeah. I love negative people because it's like looking in a reversed mirror and you can learn so much from listening to people that are negative.
That's not who you see in the morning when you look in the mirror, is it?
No. I just see a Greek god.
That's coming up next week. And then, like I said, if there's anything you would like us to discuss, please do send us an email, podcast@livingthepresent.co.uk, and we'll put it in the list and we'll get it out as soon as we can.
There's
a bit of a waiting or a backlog usually, but...
Yeah, we got there.
We'll get there in the end, don't we?
Yeah.
Livingthepresent.co.uk is our website. All the show notes and links there. There's a few things I didn't actually get to mention, which I will... put in the on the website as well, that you can do a bit of extra reading on. Twitter, Facebook and Instagram as well. And we will see you next week, won't we, Sean?
Yeah, we will indeed.
You take care.
Bye.
See ya.